Wombats. More fun than a room full of wombats. Able to reach huge audiences with a single broadcast. Yes, it's the Outdoor Journal Radio Show. And now, another exciting episode in the adventures of Outdoor Journal Radio.
Well, hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Outdoor Journal Radio, the podcast. I'm Angelo Viola. And last week, we kind of alluded to the fact that we were at the 2022 ICAST show in Orlando, Florida. It hadn't opened yet. We were down setting up. In fact, Pete and I did the podcast from our rented home on the 17th hole of this incredible golf course. I think it's the 17th hole. That's what I call it. But anyways, we kind of set up the show from there and told you that this week's edition will be at the show, and I am at the show. I'm at the Orange County Convention Center, home of the ICAST show, and Pete is not here with me in the media booth, where I'm the central command for Outdoor Journal Radio this week. Pete is out on the convention floor. He's roaming around and setting up interviews that he's going to be dropping in with us every now and then when he's got somebody that will actually give him the time of day to talk to him. And we'll put him on as soon as he does have. In the meantime, it's business as usual. Want to remind everybody about the Fishing Canada show that's up on Global Television Network, coast to coast to coast, 8 o'clock every Saturday morning. You can't miss it. In fact, most Canadians don't miss it. On Sportsman's Channel, it's on throughout the course of the week. I believe it is Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. And also on WFN. It's on as a strip 3 or 4 times a week, so you can't miss it. Once again, Global Television Network is our main broadcast. Also, you can pick up the episodes. I don't know whether they are the current, in other words, that week's episode, on fishingcanada.com and also on the Fishing Canada YouTube channel as well. There, took care of business. Some news before we get out on the convention floor. By the way, I'm going to be giving you a quick report of what I think, well, no, let me rephrase it. My favorite things that I've seen so far at the show. They may not be the best things at the show, but they're certainly my favorites, and we'll talk about them in a couple of minutes. But first, in the news, an interesting story has come up again. We spoke about it a couple of weeks ago that we had written something on fishingcanada.com that alluded to the renaming of the Asian carp. Now, that might sound a little bit strange, but some folks in Illinois suggested that if we want to try and curb the growth of this fish, which, by the way, is an invasive species, as everybody knows, and slowly moving up into the Great Lakes. In fact, there's been several cases of the fish being actually detected in the Great Lakes already. So it will not be long before it spreads throughout I would say most of southern Ontario for sure, and maybe even a little bit farther north. But in any case, it is something that we need to be concerned about. The folks in Illinois who are completely immersed in the invasive species there, they're suggesting that we might want to promote it as table fare. And they went out of their way, as you'll read in the article on fishingcanada.com, they actually had a big promotion inviting folks to give this thing a name that would be a little more appetizing and maybe promote the fact that we should be trying to eat it. Because according to several things that we've read, the fish is quite tasty. It has the same, I know we've heard this a million times, right? It tastes like chicken, but it has the same texture as chicken. And the flavor wavers between that of a mild tuna and a mild trout, which, hey, that ain't bad, if you ask me. And apparently, once it's smoked, it is an incredibly tasting source of protein. So, you know, it might not be a bad idea in trying to get it on tables and certainly in markets throughout North America so that we can start biting into it, if you will. And apparently, the name game is now over, and the new name for this species is going to be Copi. That's C-O-P-I. And is actually a short form for copious, obviously, because there's copious quantities, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, you might want to check it out. The story, we're running it again, the new updated version on fishingcanada.com. And maybe we can start looking at it as table fare and kill two birds with one stone. I'm not suggesting that this is the answer to our problems, because I think the problems are far greater than just putting it on a menu somewhere. But it might be a good start. Oh, I've just got a message here that Pete's got our first guest of the day. Take over, Mr. Bowman.
Hey, everybody. Okay, this is perfect because I'm here with my favorite bass fisherman of all time, probably America's favorite bass fisherman of all time, maybe the world's favorite bass fisherman of all time, Mr. Roland Martin. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Pete, and you're one of my favorite fishing buddies. I'm excited being here with you. You know, I was looking forward, though, because we'd kind of set it up for me to come up to your place in a couple weeks.
Right.
And then when Angelo told me that, well, I'll be spending a week walleye fishing, I said, I'm going to pass on that. I mean, I know walleyes are great, and I'll do a little walleye from time to time.
Right.
But you're a bass fisherman. I tell you, you and Angelo both are great bass fishermen. I enjoy the heck out of the five or six bass trips we've had together.
Yeah, yeah.
And some other stuff. We did some other stuff,
too.
We
did a la tuna show. We did that one time, which is very unique. But, yeah, you know, I think we're bass at all heart, and I'm going to be honest with you. It's because of Roland Martin, and back in that era when you were hot on the tournament scene, that's what got me going. As you know, I'm thinking, wow, these guys are something else. And I looked at it as, I know we're not talking really ICAST here, but this is good talk, I think. Anyways, I looked at it as, you know, a Canadian looking at all these bass fishermen, because bass was my favorite species, and they just use you guys as idols, and I think it's gotten even better and better now. I mean, to the point of now, all,
this last week, my son Scott came up and fished the St. Lawrence River.
Right. Yeah.
And what's so crazy was 30 years ago when they were having the first pandemics with the zebra mussels and the gobies, they were saying, oh, it's the worst thing that could ever happen.
Right.
It's going to ruin all the fisheries in the whole world. And look what
happened.
The record that they set last
pounds.
Week. 100 pounds of fish in 4 days.
And
so the fish are now about a pound bigger.
Oh, yeah.
Or a pound and a half bigger.
Absolutely.
Everywhere you go. Absolutely. Canada, and the neat thing about one of the things in Canada with your pandemic and the COVID, nobody's fished much. A lot of those lakes have been off limits for a couple of years.
Absolutely.
So your fishing right now is as good as it's ever been.
We're noticing
that. It can't be any better.
Yeah, we're noticing that. This is our first year back on the road fully, and so far our trips have been like stellar. You know what I mean?
You can notice the fishing in two years of a pause.
You know,
a lot of the fishing game people in different states in the country are starting to realize the importance of catch and release, number one.
Yeah.
And the importance of just the fact of pressure, like you're talking about. So now I think this Canadian close down of the lakes are making people realize, particularly in Canada, that, hey, let's make it a catch and release. Hey, you know, let's get this fishing pressure under control. And all that will add up to a better fishery.
Yeah, yeah. We're getting now, our MNR now, the Ministry of Natural Resources, is starting to segregate, like, not just it's a six walleye limit, catch and keep only. Now they're saying, okay, in Lake A or Zone A or whatever, you can keep four fish between so-and-so in a slot. In Zone B, you can keep one over a certain length. And so they are working towards that.
That's
and
good.
They knocked the numbers down, right? You
right.
know what I mean? I don't know if they're down enough yet. I guess they're probably okay. Bass, I don't agree with. They allow six bass of largemouth, smallmouth, or a combination, and anybody can catch and keep and kill them. But I don't think they'll... Maybe our majority of people aren't killing bass anyways, to be honest with you.
But all the tournament anglers, that's the beautiful thing about tournament fishing, that's 100% catch and release.
But there is
a mortality rate still, you know.
So, yeah, but you're teaching catch and release. I think that's what spawned catch and release, right, was the tournament fishing.
Right.
I believe it was anyways. So, and you know what, it's funny because guys like Angelo and myself, I'm sure you included, but as a Canadian, We keep our walleye to eat. We keep perch to eat. We'll keep some trout to eat and all that. We never keep bass to eat.
Right.
We just throw them all back.
That's the way it is in most of the states now.
Is it?
But, you know, a lot of the places I fish, like I fish this new Headwaters Lake in Florida now. It's the hottest lake that we have in Florida.
I'm seeing the footage. It's amazing.
It's really good. And there's a lot of 8-pound fish and there's a lot of trophy deals. But the reason is, one of the reasons is a total catch and release.
Yeah.
And the thing that I'm noticing, Pete, is that on those big giant bass, I'll bring a guy in, or some client will catch an 8 or 9 or 10 pounder, and quite often I'll look in his mouth and see that I'd caught it, or somebody else had caught that fish. It's clearly been caught before.
Right.
So the catch and release really worked.
Yeah. How long, Roland, here's a question for you, a technical question. That fish that was caught twice, how long do you think it would take an 8-pound largemouth to go back and bite? Well, you're getting them on shiners, or are you?
Mostly, yeah.
Or both?
Well, last October, I had a guy from Salt Lake City. He was a Mormon guy, and he'd never caught an 8-pound. So he caught an 8-pound. 8-pound, 5-ounce bass in this one spot. And the next day, I took this other guy, and he was from the other part of the country, for the East Coast, to the same spot.
Oh,
and I
boy.
Told him, I said, boy, the guy yesterday caught this 8-pound, 5-ounce bass here. This guy throws in the same spot catches the same exact fish. And it's his biggest fish. And so here's two guys in a row catch their personal best fish ever in the whole world. The same fish.
Yeah.
The same fish.
Would have never happened if he kept that one. You know, guy keeps one for a trophy and puts it on the wall. Never would have happened.
That's right.
Good for you. What else is going on with you, Roland? ICAST. What are you promoting?
Right now, you know, I get this new sponsor. It's O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Okay.
And so, you know, you're working with Pine Post, of course, and Angelo. And so, you know, you've done my editing now this is the fourth year.
Yep.
So you've done all that. And so Angelo says, when are you going to get all these films to me? Well, I was waiting this whole time to get my boats all wrapped, and so I just got them wrapped, so I'm a little bit behind.
Okay.
But I'm going next week. I'm going to the Chesapeake Bay for a couple of deals. I'm going up to Santee Cooper for a couple of deals, and then the following week I'm going to Minnesota for almost 3 weeks.
Right, that's what we were trying to get.
And I've shot about 10 little segments in the meantime, so I could probably have, in the next 6 weeks, have a basis of about 5 or 6 shows. And
nice.
I'll get those to you guys, and we'll get that edited and get ready to
it's
go for next year.
For the people listening, when like Roland said earlier, he didn't have, since he could shoot the walleye show, but he really doesn't have much use. It's so funny how the audiences, like our audience loves walleye. They just live for walleye. Canadian audience, a great Canadian iconic fish, right? And they can deal with bass every now and then. It's just about the opposite with you. I mean, want bass. And
you know, one of the things that I've been in television now for 30 years, 40 years, and so everybody's wanting social media. So I got into the YouTube stuff, and I've got 165,000 subscribers now. And they all want bass. Now, maybe because I'm a bass fisherman.
Yeah.
And maybe in your case, they might want more walleye because they know you're a walleye fisherman as well.
Maybe.
But I'll post a little 5-pound bass episode, and it'll far outproduce something I'll do in saltwater. Far outproduce any kind of walleye thing. It's the holy grail for me, my numbers.
Right.
My numbers are strictly kind of revolving about what I do with bass.
Right.
So I'm doing less and less of the other fish.
Yep.
I'm doing more bass because
that's
my Bass Pro Shop and all these people, they want me to promote what's working.
Yeah.
You know,
speaking of YouTube, so if you're going out, Roland Martin's going to go out and shoot a YouTube segment on soft stick baits or something. Can you pull off a whole segment on one fish, or do you need 2 or 3 fish, or what does it take for?
Well, you know, this sounds crazy. My best video ever that I got over 2.5 million hits on this one YouTube video.
Yeah.
And you know what I did, Pete, is you wouldn't believe it. I left my boat home. I left everything home, and I drove down to the little canal here in Florida. And I took two rods, a frog rod and a sinker rod. I said, folks, I'm going to show you how to fish from the bank.
Perfect.
And we did a simple bank show.
Right.
Very comprehensive. Showed them just how to do the Cinco deal, how to throw the frog, and explain it all. I have almost 3 million views on that one show.
It
was a very elementary show.
Yeah.
So it's not that I caught a lot of fish.
Yeah.
It's just that I did an elementary thing, ABC kind of format.
Right.
How to.
Yeah.
You know, that's
the audience,
the key
seems to love
it.
The how to's, right?
The key
and
to
it. The basics of fishing.
And the second best video I ever did was how to tie these 3 simple knots.
I've seen that one too.
And it was like, I got 2 million views on that. It's just how I tie a double uni, how I tie a Palomar knot, and how I tie something else. I can't remember. And it was just simple knots that we tie every single day. And I just explained it real easy and very how-to format.
Yeah.
And that's what they want.
I think people, you're getting a lot of new maybe newer anglers, people that don't know, you know, all the knots or whatever like that. It's an easy way. Now, remember, I mean, back in our day when we were kids, you didn't have that. You had to figure it out. You might have got taught by a pro somewhere or something like that. But otherwise, you had to trial and error. Your trialing knots would slip out, and you'd, you know, mono wasn't good for one. And, yeah, it was
now, the other game. Success on YouTube seems to come with, like, if I razzle-dazzle with my $80,000 bass boat.
Right.
That doesn't get as many hits as if I take my little aluminum boat out and paddle around or something, or just a little trolling motor. I'll get twice the audience.
Isn't that
funny how they don't want to, and they don't want me to catch 100 fish.
Right.
And they don't really want me to catch the biggest fish. If I catch a 10-pounder, it kind of gets them all upset because they haven't ever seen a 10-pounder. Well, they think it's kind of over the top.
That's interesting.
It's not catching a big fish. It's not catching a lot of fish. It's not using $1 million equipment. It's doing the meat and potato ABC stuff. That's what it is.
Right, because you got to look at that average angler that can't afford $20,000 in electronics, and they can't afford the big boat, and they have one or two rods and reels, maybe just a spinning rod and reel combo or something like that, and they can only fish from the bank or a canoe.
Sure.
So, yeah, you're right. That's probably the average person, right? So
yeah, that's it. That's where I get the numbers.
Awesome, buddy. What else you got coming up? Anything else?
No.
What are you doing lately? You're looking good. You look good shape.
I gained 5 pounds back. I got down in the 170s. Now back in the 180s again. But I'm doing my little exercises.
How
and
old
stuff.
Are you? You don't
I'm
mind me asking.
82.
82, man. You should see this guy sitting across the table from me right now. He looks like a champ. At 82, he looks like, oh my God. Good for you.
But
buddy.
I still do my sit-ups and push-ups in the morning. I do all that.
Yeah. There you go. Roland Martin's been out in the sun his whole life. Okay.
Yeah.
Got a great tan. Do you wear sunscreen?
I do. And, you know, I also have a dermatologist. Her name is Sharon Jackson.
Right.
And this last 6 months, I have a skin check every 6 months.
Yep.
And this last check, she went over my whole entire body, even though I got little brown spots everywhere and it looked kind of old and wrinkly. Yeah. She didn't find a single bad deal.
Good.
Not
for
even
you.
One, even something to even take a biopsy of.
Right.
Normally they see little suspicious spots.
Yep.
And they take a little biopsy and they send it off.
Right.
Which it's all come back negative. I've never had a positive deal anyhow.
Yep. Yep.
But anyway, this time she says, "Oh, I'm all right." So
good for you.
But I do use sunscreen.
Oh, good. Because that's an important point for all anglers. I don't care if you're in Florida with like Roland or in Northwest Ontario, like Anz and I are going next week. I always wear sunscreen, and I do it like Roland does every 6 months, get a skin check. Because if you're out on the water a lot, that sun is brutal on your skin and all that. And you don't want to go through biopsies. You don't want to go through getting stuff cut off your body. And even the burning with the nitrogen.
Oh, I know. That's
nasty,
not fun.
Right?
But
so
they usually burn us a couple spots with the nitrogen. But not this last time. They didn't even do that.
Buddy, you're getting better.
Yeah.
You're destroying your bag of wine.
Run out of bad looking deals. I don't know.
Beautiful. Okay, I think we're pretty good with this one. Roland, thanks so much for sitting in, buddy. Great
Thank you, Pete. And thanks for Fishing Canada and all the guys up there and Oshawa. Boy, I tell you what, you guys rock.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
I don't care what anybody says. Roland Martin, just to me anyways, you could just never get tired of listening to the guy. I mean, there's so much knowledge and wealth of experience there. And good job in the interview, buddy. New on fishingcanada.com, a great article that was just released, I believe, a couple of days ago. And the article is How to Use Wood to Find Largemouth Bass. Now, for those of you who are regulars here, you know that Pete and I are bass fanatics. And if we had our way, all fish would be called BASS. But in particular, shallow water bass, and in particular in wood. And that's why this article is really, really a fascinating read. Some of the favorite structures that you'll read about in there that we fish quite often that hold good quantities and quality of largemouth bass are things like docks. Boat docks are exquisite, especially older boat docks, and especially boat docks that are predominantly wood. Now, most docks today are going to be floating docks, and or they'll have steel legs, and or they'll have those big 45-gallon drums under them. They are not the type of docks we're talking about, although there have been a few big fish caught under them. But the docks we're talking about are the wooden structures, the older docks that are solid wood, wood legs, wood planks, wood running rails. Everything about them is wood, and they are the ideal bass holding cover. Large dead trees, overhanging trees, standing timber, any kind of tree that's either standing up in the water or hanging off a bank and hanging down over top of the water are ideal places for bass to hang out. And I'll explain why in a moment in all those spots. Predominantly, fish like bass like to have overhead cover. So whether we're talking wooden docks or just docks in general, anything over top of their heads make them feel comfortable, and it keeps them out of the harm's way from any predators that might be coming from above. But when you get into wooden docks, solid wooden docks, these are the special ones. And the reason being is that they will hold, not only do they have cover for the fish, but they'll hold food for the fish. Great ambush points, great areas for these fish to live all summer long in most cases, and just continue feeding there, because all of the little nooks and crannies that you'll find in standing timber, dock legs, etc., all attract small, tiny little zooplankton and invertebrates and anything that other smaller than bass, but larger fish or bait fish that will be consuming. Crayfish love them as well. So anything that will be eating those small, little, tiny, invisible food sources obviously are going to be there, and the bass are obviously going to be hanging out to eat them. So that's kind of the reason that all wooden structures are much better than, say, steel legs on a dock. However, overhead cover is overhead cover, so don't avoid fishing any of those as well. Low-hanging branches and trees obviously offer the overhead cover, but also incredible amounts of insects will fall out of those leaves and those branches into the water, meaning the bass can just sit there and feed. It's like a smorgasbord every day for them. The other thing that's covered in this great article is wood tools. Wood tools meaning what are some of the things that you'll need to fish wood structures for bass. Number one on that list, by the way, to nobody's surprise when I read it, polarized glasses. They're a must, an absolute must. Sonar and you know, in particular, things like LiveScope are playing a bigger role in fishing wood, because you can now see out the side, you can now see it in real time, you can now see whether that particular overhanging structure has fish under it or not. So they're playing a bigger role every day in fishing for wood. But you know what? I mean, we fished for wood before any of this technology was available, so don't be afraid to attack these great bass holding areas without technology, although it's a great asset to have too. In terms of baits, I mean, flipping jigs and with trailers are still number one. It allows you a nice vertical but also quasi horizontal presentation. If you have to be back a little ways, you can do some real damage with a flipping jig and a trailer on it. Some of the alternatives that are really popular today are any of the creature baits, the big craws, the beaver, anything like that. Hooked up weedless will work, especially in overhanging stuff like branches and trees that are laying down on the shore. They work well. The good old plastic worm, how many times have we said it on the Fish and Canada show? Senkos were designed for this type of cover. Absolutely designed to fish for bass that are in cover. Time to go back out on the floor. Wee Petey has another guest for us.
Okay, we're at ICAST 2022 again, and another interview going on here. I'm going to call him a buddy of mine because we fished together now in the past. Danny Thompson from Garmin is here. Garmin represents this. They do well in representing in this place. So how you doing, Danny?
Doing good. Good. Enjoying to be down here another year.
No kidding. So obviously at ICAST, what do you guys, what's Garmin do at ICAST? Just so everybody in our audience knows what ICAST is and what your role is here.
Yeah, you know, ICAST obviously is being a big industry show. There's a lot of stuff going on. For me, I'm a sales guy, so I have a lot of meetings with retailers and distributors and that kind of stuff, talking about new product that's coming out, stuff we're working on, different things we can do to improve. But obviously, we have engineering team here as well, and pro staff team and marketing teams, that kind of stuff. So there really is a lot of things going on all at once.
And you are talking to people that want to buy garment product for stores, retailers, et cetera, right? This is not open to the public, this show. So you're, who are you talking to?
I'm talking to the actual buyer of the big box retail store, the actual guy deciding what that retailer or what that store is going to carry for the upcoming season.
Perfect. Okay. So out of the way, the other thing about ICAST is that all companies want to showcase their new products coming up. And the one thing that I think we're very excited about is your new ice kit. So give your new ice bundle. Give us a chat about that.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, me being a Minnesota guy, I love ice fishing.
Yeah,
And really kind of kicked it off. Actually, I was looking on my social media there. It was 6 years ago that we announced our very first ice fishing bundle down here at ICAST.
Really?
So time flies.
Ah, cool.
But, you know, we've come a long ways from having Striker ice bundle and, you know, all the way this year up to a LiveScope ice bundle with the new LiveScope Plus transducer that gives us the great range and clarity and all the stuff that we're getting out of that Plus. We got a lithium battery in there. We got an EchoMap 9-inch unit in there with mapping. And, I mean, it's really the premium stuff out there right now.
What do you think? Because I've used the 32 ice fishing, the LVS 32 transducer. What do you think the big difference is going to be in this new transducer?
So the big difference is to me, at least when I'm ice fishing, is distance. So when I drill a hole and I'm scanning and looking for fish in that forward mode, I'm able to see fish, you know, a lot farther. I don't know if I want to say almost like double, it seems at times. You know, it depends on your depth, obviously. But the distance is incredible, especially finding, you know, crappies and that kind of stuff. But the other thing that was a big improvement is the target separation. So those walleyes that are laying right on the bottom, or those perch that are right on the bottom, you can see them now. You weren't able to see them with the 32.
Yeah. I experienced exactly that. I was sitting in the hut one day, and I knew they were underneath me only because I went to the down mode, and I knew they were only because there was a slight bit of movement. They'd come in, but they were coming in so close to bottom, I could barely see that. So that'll be better now?
Yeah, now you got a lot better target separation. So you'll be able to see those. You'll probably see the whole fish, you know, not to mention just the clarity and kind of that haze that you'll get in the water column. A lot of that's gone now just because of the cleaned up resolution.
And Danny made a great point there. He said that he drops his, you know, drops the transducer down, scans around. So if he... if he's making a hole, or a lot of ice fishermen, they're making a hole just to scan and scout. They'll look over there. Oh, over there, 110 feet over to the west is where this school of crappies are. And then basically you pace off 110 feet over to the west. You can drop your hole right on top of these fish then, right? That's that's the beauty of LiveScope.
Absolutely. I mean, you're just saving so much time, and you're getting on fish, you know? And, and a lot of times I'll use it for the structure. You know, like you'll look at the map and you'll think, okay, I'm on that 20-foot break line. But then you drill a hole and you're off by a couple of feet. You know, GPS error might be 9 feet. Mm-hmm. So I'll use that live scope to get right exactly where I need to be before I go through all the work of setting up the fish house and stuff.
Yeah. I've got to give you I was just on a lake on the weekend fishing largemouth. And I was fishing a big hump that's very easy to find with your fish finders, with everything. Like, it's so easy to find. You can see it sometimes. And I was just fishing off the edge of it. And I turned my live scope out to the deep water side of it. And I saw something. And I thought it was bait. God, is that bait or what is that? And then I looked at it more. I said, it might be weeds. There were strands going up like that. That's got to be like 7 or 8 strands of weed. So it was that small of a spot in 10 feet of water. I clocked the largemouth for the next 20 minutes on that. Like, it was unbelievable. Yeah. I would have never got any, and one of those was almost a 5-pounder. I would have never got any of those fish had I not had live scope on it.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely. And I hear stories. You know, I was with a buddy, was doing the same thing for bluegills. There was a hard spot with the sand surrounded by weeds. And I mean, if you're not on that spot, you're not catching them.
Yeah, for sure. The other product you guys have here now, the deep with that LiveScope, the new transducer.
Yeah. What is it? What's that? Yeah, so we got the new LiveScope XR and extended range, you know, is what it is. And it's really designed for that guy on the Great Lakes or, you know, offshore, something like that, where we're going all the way up to 500 feet of depth and distance now with that transducer in freshwater, 300 in saltwater. So, you know, being able to drop for grouper, being able to jig for lake trout or see fish in those depths of waters, you know, something we weren't able to do, now we can.
You know, the old Panoptix transducer used to do that. The PS30 is a 31,
Yeah.
You could do it with that, but that, you know what I mean? Now
different technology,
you have LiveScope technology to do it. So the image there, let's say a lake trout angler, because you were just up in Saskatchewan, you're fishing 110 feet of water, and there are lakers cruising around on that bottom down there. You seeing them, no problem?
Yeah, I've actually got a video on my phone where, you know, I'm hooked into a lake trout. I got 18 ounces of banana weights.
Yeah.
You can see those weights, almost see the break in those weights. And then you see the leader, you see the fish, and you know how lake trout expel air?
Yep.
You can see it blowing bubbles as it's coming up. And then we're actually able to see those bubbles come to the surface. So,
really?
And the tail beats of that lake trout and everything, even down there at 100 feet.
Okay, so you have got some good power going into LightScope.
Absolutely.
Is that... It's the same box, right?
Yep.
So the GLS-10 or whatever?
GLS-10, and all you really have to do if you already have LightScope would be to buy the transducer only.
Right.
You know, you're one software update away from being able to use XR.
And is the power then coming from the this extra power? Is it coming from that transducer itself? Or
yeah, because it's frequencies, you know. So if you use a higher frequency, you're going to get better definition, but you're not going to be able to go as deep.
Right.
So what we're doing is we're bringing the resolution down a little bit from the plus, but we're using lower frequencies so we can travel to deeper waters.
You know,
and there's obviously, I'm a sales guy, there's a lot more to it than that, but that's kind of the short of it.
Excellent. Anything else coming out at the show here? Anything else new to talk about?
You know, that's kind of the big stuff. We do have a new 5-inch ice fishing bundle. Obviously, it's fun to talk about the LightScope bundle and whatnot, but we have a new 5-inch screen that we've got in an ice fishing bundle. Very affordable unit, 5-inch screen,
Echo Map
unit, so it's got the mapping in there and whatnot. So that's kind of the big stuff this year, you know, and like I said, working for Garmin's awesome because we're always working on new stuff. So you never know what's around the corner.
We love when you guys give us the announcements and all that.
Yep.
Perfect. Danny Thompson from Garmin. Thanks so much, buddy.
Yeah, thank you.
How much of a coincidence was that? We were talking about technology and how to use LightScope to look under trees and docks for bass. And Pete's got Danny Thompson, one of the most knowledgeable guys when it comes to LightScope and all of the Garmin products for that matter. So that was fantastic. All right, move on to, let's go to this week's fan question, which is kind of an interesting one, and I kind of wish Pete was here with me because I'd be interested to find out his take on this, but John Kovorden sends an email in, and he wants to know, he says, do you think that deep water fishing in warm water is unethical? And do release fish have any chance of survival at all when they're brought up from deep, warm water? Wow. A couple of things come to mind. First of all, I guess you'd have to define deep, warm water because generally that deeper water is also colder. Now, it can be really warm on the surface, certainly in the upper one-third, but you know, if the depth you're talking is, say, over 30 feet, 30 to 40 feet, generally that lower band of water is considerably cooler than the top. Having said that, by the time you drag the fish up into the warmer water, it might have even more adverse effect than just dragging it up from such a deep... we've talked about it here before. You know, fish get the bends just like humans do. If they don't have a chance to take it slowly when they're ascending, they're no different. Other than, say, a lake trout would be the only species that comes to mind that can actually decompress, has the ability to decompress quickly. The rest of the freshwater fish don't have that ability, and they don't decompress. So generally speaking, if you're fishing for things like smallmouth bass, walleye, just about any other freshwater species, and you're fishing in more than 30 feet of water, you know, into that 35, 40 feet of water, you should really rethink it, because whether it's warm on the surface or not, there is a very good chance that the fish will have a difficult time going back home. And there's been a million studies, people a lot more intelligent about this fact than I am, a lot of different opinions, but from personal experience, we try and avoid it. Let's put it this way. We try and avoid it if at all possible. And then if it's not possible or there is an accidental hookup and it is a deep water, then we take all kinds of precautions that I'm not going to get into at this point. But, you know, fishing tournaments for the number of years that we have, it was a necessity that you kind of were up on anything that you could do to help these fish survive, especially if you're going to throw them in a live well. So not only did they not decompress on the way up, but now you're going to throw them in a completely foreign environment with very little water, a lot of stress, and chances were not that great for survival. So we just tend to avoid it, period, and stay away from it. And I would suggest that people do that as well. There are so many great opportunities to fish for most of the freshwater species that we're after. They're in shallower than 40 feet of water. And by the way, beyond 40 feet, I would say the chances are zero that that fish will survive. Between 30 and 40, if the ascent is slow and you don't haul the fish straight up, not bad. But if you're hardlining it and pulling that fish straight up from that 40-foot depth, it's certain death for sure. And that might be the fish that you keep to eat, right? So that's my answer to that. Hopefully it helped you, John. I believe we have an entire article dedicated to that on fishingcanada.com as well. So you might want to check it out. And speaking of checking out, we have our next interview from the floor.
Okay, again, ICAST 2022. And the best thing about ICAST, the ICAST show, is walking around and just seeing recognizable faces, people you know, people in the industry, tournament guys, everything, anything and everything. Ange just saw Bill Dance, you know what I mean? So, and then I'm walking along and we see Corey Johnston, one of our three elite BASS anglers, sort of the cream of the crop, Corey, Chris, and of course Gussie, that are fishing the tournament trial right now currently. And Corey just came off what most people would think is an absolutely amazing tournament, but Corey is a competitor of all competitors, and a second place to him is like, no, thank you. I want to win this thing. But how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good, good. So what's up at ICAST, first off, before we get in that tournament time?
Man, it's ICAST is a great show. Like you touched on, you see a lot of people. There's a lot of new faces, a lot of familiar faces. And, it's one of these things where you can go around not only to your sponsors, but to all the other booths around, see all the new stuff, and again, just meet a bunch of new people.
What is a professional tournament angler's job at ICAST? What are you here to do?
We're basically here to showcase the new products, showcase existing products, and do some videos, get the social media out there, and just shake some hands.
Perfect, perfect. Okay, let's get into obviously the nuts and bolts. That tournament in particular, the New York tournament, for anybody listening that knows Corey and Chris, they love this Lake Ontario, St. Lawrence River, and all that. It's their bread and butter water. They've done so well here in the past. This past elite tournament, Corey pulled off. You're the first angler to weigh in 100 pounds of smallmouth. Is
that
correct?
That is correct.
Well done, buddy. I mean, second place doesn't matter there when you got that. Give us a quick lowdown of maybe you had that one day of 21 pounds. Every other day was like huge weights, including your last day. We'll get into that in a minute. But, give us a kind of a quick rundown of your tournament.
It was, for one, the weather couldn't have set up any better than what it did. I mean, anyone that's been out there on the river or Lake Ontario or any big body of water for that matter knows that you don't get 4 days of glass calm weather. And the first day it blew a bit in the afternoon, but, it was still very much manageable. And the next 3 days were like glass. And, I ran the Ranger, as far as I could, wide open, and you can't do that
really
anytime.
On the
Great Lake, and caught them the way that I wanted to catch them, which was the best part of the whole week.
Yeah,
and just had a good time.
What would you, without getting into any specifics, were you drop shotting them? Were you Ned rigging them?
I was, for the most part. I probably caught 75 to 80% of them on a drop shot.
Right on.
Yeah.
Any bait you can advertise and talk about, or
yeah. Chris and I designed a bait. It's called the CJ Smasher, and we put a lot of work into it, believe it or not. I mean, it is a rubber worm, and mm-hmm. people think, not a lot of work goes into a rubber worm, but we took a lot of the best attributes of other baits that we liked and combined it all into one, and we caught not all of our fish drop shot in that bait, but we caught the vast majority using it.
Nice. Now, give us you weighed in 28 plus pounds on the last day, which is, an outstanding, it's a ridiculous weight. I mean, when you think about it, it's such a sack of big fish. Yeah. Five fish, folks, that equal 28 plus pounds. Tell us that day on your final day.
That day was just a special day. It, again, the weather was ideal for how I wanted to catch them. And I had a game plan to hit a few spots and then make a long run to an area that I know wasn't getting fished. And I never, ever made it to that area. I stopped on my first spot, and I'd seen a big fish the day before and never caught it. And I knew right where it was sitting, and I stayed way back, and I made a cast and hooked the fish, got it in the boat. It was a six-pounder. So, you know, that to start the day with a six-pounder is... You know, it's good. And, you know, when a day is going to go right, you almost know. You just feel it. And, man, I go to the next spot, and I could see them swimming everywhere and couldn't catch them. But they weren't, there was a few big ones, like fives, maybe a six or two. But I hadn't been able to catch them good there all week. I catch a few. First day I caught two big ones, and then they stopped biting. So I made a run into another little spot where I caught them the first day, and I turned the live scope and I seen a blob there, and it wasn't far away from the boat, but I couldn't see the fish. So I just cast it over there, felt the tick, and set the hook, and it was one like 5 3/4. And those were the two first fish I had in the boat, and I'm thinking to myself, we could catch a dirty 30 today, but. I stayed in that area, caught a bunch of fish, a lot of fours, 4.5-pounders, and I had a decision to make whether I was going to make a long run to new water or I was going to stay close and fish more, get more fishing time. So I made the decision to stay close, and I went and found another group of fish, and we talked off air about it, but they were magnums. Like they were true, giant fish, the biggest fish I've ever seen in one group school together. And I caught one of them, and I couldn't get any of the other ones to bite. There was eight of them there, and they were all six plus. And if I had been able to catch those fish, it would have been a crazy weight, but I couldn't get them to bite. So that you got to make a decision at that point whether you're sitting on the winning fish, but if you wait it out, will they bite? Can you get them to bite? Maybe not.
Right.
So I had to make a decision, and I made the decision to make a run and to check some deep stuff. And they weren't there. They were there, but they wouldn't bite.
Right.
And I hit a spot on the way back, and they were shallow, and they were loaded everywhere. So, I was picking off the ones that I wanted. They were hungry. They wanted to eat. And I caught a 5.5 and a 5. But I couldn't get rid of the 5. It sounds stupid to try to kill a 5, but it's
unreal.
I lost one fish that might have been a 5.5. I fought it for a while, but it was just that was it.
What a day. Magical day. 28 day. Pounds, how many ounces?
I think 8. 28.8.
28.5 pounds. That's pretty, that and the winner, what's the guy's name?
Jay, he
obviously he caught consistent bags every day, not 102 pounds, right?
He did.
Is he from
he's from North? Wisconsin.
Okay.
And so. I know his dad pretty well.
Right.
Fished the Sturgeon Bay Open against him and his old man.
Right.
And,
so they know smallmouth pretty good.
They
then,
do.
Obviously.
And 2 years ago, Chris and I won that tournament, and they were second.
Right.
So, that was kind
he's
of
paying you back.
Paybacks are a bitch kind of thing, right?
There's an important point for people listening here, though, right now. What Corey was saying, you think a guy as good, guys as good as these guys in the elites, are just going out there and smashing every fish and catching every... You can hear Corey catches one out of a school of eight, and then they're not biting. He went to another place, they're not biting. You don't catch every fish you see out there, right? You know what I mean?
You used to.
Yeah.
You used to be able to, but now with all the pressure and the live scope and forward-facing sonar and just people can go on the internet and know where to go, know how to catch them.
Yeah.
And the local pressure out there is unbelievable. Fish are—they're not dumb.
Yeah.
They catch on to the ping of the sonar, and you used to be able to catch them on 2D. Now you can't even mark one on 2D.
Yeah.
Now you used to be able to catch them, 30, 40 feet out. Now you have to catch them 80 feet out.
Right.
So it's just it progresses, and they get smarter and smarter.
Right. And then it's to a point that basically nobody can catch them. Nobody can catch them. Obviously.
100%.
Very quickly. you were running a lifestyle now, you and Chris and Gussie. You live in Canada, but you're fishing this whole circuit, one of the biggest circuits going in the U.S. Give us kind of a lowdown of the lifestyle of a Canadian angler hitting the BASS circuit.
Man, it's hard work.
Yeah.
For people are like, oh, I wish I did what you did. You have the best job in the world, but they don't see the behind the scenes part.
We get that all the time too, Hans and I get that.
Of what we do. Yeah. And I mean, you're away from home a lot, you got wife, kids, and that's probably the hardest part of what we do is being away from home so much. And but when we're on the road, I mean, we got a good group of guys that we usually rent a house with, Airbnb, and but it's long days on the water. We get 3 days to practice and you're on the water from dark till dark, and you're not eating good, you're not you're make sandwiches for the day, and it is what it is, and you got to go out and hope you found enough fish to try and win the tournament.
What about cost wise? I mean, with the price of gas now ridiculous, the price of entry fees, give the reality of getting into this game that everybody thinks, oh, you're just going tournament fish.
Well, the reality of it is everything costs money, and for us to drive all the way down there with gas prices the way they are, we got food, it's ridiculously expensive.
Like each tournament, thousands of dollars?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. 100%. Plus, what's an entry fee if you can get into the event?
$5,000.
Per event. See, think about that, folks.
So you're probably $8,000 an event or more.
Is U.S. money?
U.S.
See that? There's 10 grand Canadian there per event.
Yeah, by the time you pay for your food, your lodging, your fuel, you might be $9,000 depending on boat fuel and whatnot.
Yeah,
Yeah, you better be catching them. You're going to make money.
Yeah. I guess it knocks some people out. Some people, I'm sure sponsorship, some sponsors help, I guess, in that sense, would they? Or do they get
100%. Some, that's we wouldn't be able to do it without sponsors.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're the ones that are the backbone behind what we do. And like I said, without them, we wouldn't be doing what we do.
Perfect. Well, thanks, buddy, for sitting in with us. Corey Johnston, BASS elite angler, one of the top Canadian sticks, probably ever will be, too, like that, sitting at ICAST.
Thank you for having me. We appreciate it.
All right, buddy.
Oh, that's great. Talk about bass experts. You're not going to get much better than the Johnson boys, for sure. Unbelievable anglers. And a lot of people call them one-dimensional, by the way, but I've had conversations with both brothers. They do fish things other than bass and do love fishing in general. So they apply some of that skill and knowledge that they've garnered over the years, bass fishing to other species. And most of you should as well. I had an opportunity before we started this broadcast or podcast, I guess, to go into the new product booth here at the ICAST show, where they open up just before the actual show officially opens. And they let you go through, let media go through and look at some of the brand new items that are being put out on display from some of the manufacturers. Some of them, by the way, let me just correct that. Some of them are not brand new. Some of them are revisited. A lot of times what goes around comes around, and we see stuff that was prevalent in the 60s and 70s kind of getting a new facelift and rebranding and renaming and all of a sudden appearing in the new bait category. So I've got one of those on my list here. One of the most exciting things that I saw, and Danny Thompson from Garmin spoke about it at length, is the new LiveScope Plus ice fishing bundle from Garmin that is unveiled just here at the show and will be available, I'm told, this fall and winter up in Canada. But talk about a product that is perfect for our Canadian fishing. And this thing, by the way, I also don't want to make it sound like it's too one-dimensional, because they call it ice bundle does not mean that you can't take this thing out in the summertime and apply it to any type of fishing boat, canoe, or anything you want to put it in, and use it just like you would through the ice. It's just a great way to have eyes below the surface. And speaking of which, the LiveScope XR. Now, I don't know much about it. I didn't have a chance to really study it in depth, but All we've been hearing about the last several years as the whole Garmin LiveScope and Panoptics first came out as well, were the deep water anglers saying, yeah, that's all well and good for you shallow water fishermen, but what's in it for us? Well, guess what? The LiveScope XR is exactly that. It's all the benefits and features of the conventional LiveScope, but on steroids. This thing will see up to 500 feet down in fresh water, and 300 feet in salt water, by the way, for you saltwater anglers, it's a plus too. But yeah, now you can see all of these great images that we've taken advantage of the last several years in shallow water. You can see it up to 500 feet. I still don't understand how they can do that, but apparently they can. The other thing that struck me before I get into some of the baits, and I've been probably saying this for the last three or four iCasts, kayaks, man, the kayaks that are coming out on the market are just out of this world these days. I saw a kayak at this new product booth that has all, with one exception, it has all the bells and whistles that your favorite bass boat would have. Obviously, the exception would be a V8 Mercury on the back, but everything else built into a kayak, complete with paddles and steering rudders and rod holders and electronic base and live wells and storage compartments. And I mean, it just blows one's mind what they're doing in kayaks. Now, in terms of baits, Yozuri has got what I think is going to be one of those, I'll call it generational baits, but I really can't because the name was used in the 60s and 70s, and that is Twitch Bait. The Yozuri 3DB Twitch Bait. Remember that. The Yozuri 3DB Twitch Bait. It is going to put a whole new slant on hard baits and how we fish hard baits. And if you are from the 70s and even early 80s, you'll remember the twitch baiting craze that was prevalent throughout that decade. And it's basically taking a hard bait that has either neutral buoyancy, or in this case, what's really cool about this 3DB, it's a slow sinking bait, very, very slow sinking bait. And you let it drop down the water column, you know, to whatever depth either you've seen the fish at or where you think the fish are, and then you twitch it. So think of top water action, except down below the surface. It acts just like a top water bait, except 1 foot, 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet, 5 feet, 6 feet below the surface. And you run it the same way. It is an incredible bait. Remember that. It's called Yozuri 3DB Twitch Bait, and you need to get you some. It comes in two sizes and I believe a dozen or so colors. It also features another new repurposed item, and that is the internal prism concept. For years, we had internal prisms in clear-bodied hard baits, and the reason for that was a number of reasons. First of all, you could put a much more reflective surface inside a bait because it's running flat as opposed to trying to curve it around the outside of a bait. But more importantly is that the surface would never wear off, which a lot of crankbaits, a lot of jerkbaits, a lot of topwater baits, a lot of hard baits, after they've been hit a few times, you know, you'll start getting marks on them, paint will fall off, you get teeth rakes through them. With this new 3D internal prism concept that's in the Yozuri baits, and in particular in this 3DB twitch bait I talked about, that'll never happen. And it is so reflective, it is scary. Absolutely scary. So those were my favorites. There were a couple more, but those were my highlights. Keep in mind, there's about 2,000 products on display here at the iCast show, so sometimes it's pretty hard to narrow it down. I guess Mr. Bowman is not coming back to the booth to sign off with me, so I will do it on behalf of the entire Fishing Canada and Outdoor Journal crew. I'm Angelo Biola, and he was Peter Bowman out on the floor at iCast. Talk to you next time, folks.